Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome to... Oh, there we go. Audio issues.
Let's work on them.
Welcome to PWT Talks NXT for 420. So there were going to be some weird things happening. Hopefully that was the only one. April 20th, 2021. We are talking NXT. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Just a two-man show this week, and we will get to that. Let's talk main event from this show. If you want to email us, you can do that thing. That's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We got a couple of emails here, and if you want to call us, that's 515-605-9345. We got just a couple of emails, but a gaggle of callers to talk about tonight's, I thought, very strong show. Last week I thought was the best in a while, and this week I thought was, again, the best in a while. Being unopposed makes these wrestling companies put their best foot forward all of a sudden, which is odd, but here we are. So let's talk main event. This was Kyle O'Reilly versus Cameron Grimes. It's weird to lead with this match because it was kind of no frills. It was a single episode feud that went down between O'Reilly and Grimes. 13-29 this went. Kyle O'Reilly wins with his top rope knee, as he did over Adam Cole. And Grimes, an interesting choice, to say the least, for Kyle O'Reilly in this budding babyface turn of his, because Grimes is popular. Kyle O'Reilly kind of wearing toolish clothing out in first, doing his... not doing the little faux hockey thing as badly as he was before, but with the intentionally ripped jeans and jean jacket. I don't know. I don't know, guys, but I thought his gear for the actual match was fine, and I thought he was fine in the match. Better than fine, because he is Kyle O'Reilly. O'Reilly, of course, goes over in 13 and a half on a show that had 50 minutes and 38 seconds of wrestling. And I feel like there should be something more to say about this, but there's not much. O'Reilly did pass by Karrion Kross and Scarlett at the gorilla position as he was about to go to the ring. It's clear that they're teasing O'Reilly as the next major challenger for that championship. But this could be a red herring if it's going to be Adam Cole coming up and derailing him from that. I don't know what to expect there. I thought it was very interesting that Finn Balor was noticeable in his absence. I guess we'll see if they just didn't have time for him this week. I'm very glad that if they don't have any major step forward for somebody, just keep them off for a week. I wish AEW would do that, because that is my big sticking point with them trying to put everybody on the show every single week, and it's watering things down. Main event, Tom Staupe, who are you and what did you think?
Yes, in the billing of Kelly Wells and Friends, I am the and Friends. I'm surprised you liked this show so much. I thought it was just kind of left to flap in the breeze. But as for this bookending angle, I hate finding myself complaining about NXT not seeming to rush something after that's been my primary complaint with them forever. But I just thought that in the main event slot, this was a bad hook, because we were given no reason to believe that it would be an upset at all. It's just like, okay, we're going to watch Kyle O'Reilly win a match. We know what that looks like. Even if it's nice to see Grimes on TV again, although, you know, you already pointed out that Grimes is popular and they keep putting him up against rising baby faces. So that's just, seems counteractive, but there was also like no concrete tease that if you stay tuned, maybe Adam Cole or maybe Karrion Kross will make their presence known at the end. And for those of us who had that in the back of our heads anyway, it still just didn't happen. It was just the win for Kyle O'Reilly, and they went off the air. So that felt a little limp to me. Again, as much as I hate myself saying it, because I'm asking them to have had an angle when they did not need to have one. But in the main event slot, it just felt a little limp. Yeah, Kyle, I think the big takeaways here are just from Kyle trying to find balance, I think, in what everybody genuinely liked about him as a heel in Undisputed Era, and balancing that in with his newer, more grounded, regular guy act. And he did come across like a regular guy, for better or for worse, because, you know, there were things about his promo that also didn't feel main event. But that's also, like, you don't want Kyle O'Reilly to be something that he's not, and we've said forever that Kyle O'Reilly almost seems like he doesn't fit in the wrestling world because he just seems like a regular dude, and that's part of the appeal. So it might just be a hump that we have to get over with him, but I worry that I was worried a little bit seeing that, and, you know, you get, yeah, he's still air guitaring. The passion isn't quite there. Maybe he's trying to find his balance. Maybe he just thinks his new entrance music sucks. He is still making the Dumb and Dumber references. But then, yeah, the wardrobe, first it was the faux hawk, and now he's coming out there looking like Hunter S. Dimebag. And it's just, there are a lot of hurdles that Kyle, I think, is putting in front of himself that don't need to be there.
Yeah, I feel the same. I really was not about the gear at the beginning. His street gear is no good. And he was saying, man, it's so good to be away from Undisputed Era so I can finally be myself. And I was like, well, if this is yourself, is that great? But his gear in the match was good. Yeah, Dumb and Dumber is older than he thinks it is. It's an old movie. And I don't know why he felt the need to do that.
I think it's just because that's a thing he always does.
Yeah.
Know? Sometimes he gets it in more of a subtle way, but he's always acting like, which one is it, Lloyd? The Jim Carrey one.
I would have thought that was Harry, but now I don't remember. There's a Harry, there's a Lloyd. Can't remember who's who anymore because it's been a lot of years, because it was, you know, it was okay.
Lloyd,
yeah.
Christmas, yep.
Okay, yes, yep, now that you say that, yes, that is correct. Yeah, Samsonite, that was the money line in that movie. Absolutely the money line in that movie. So, I don't know, we're talking about a rising babyface star, and in that we found ourselves having the most fun talking about a Dumb and Dumber reference. So I guess you tell us if that's a good thing or not. Yeah, this was interesting in that this is the first time, Tom, where I've felt that we really did have a developmental show, in that the top star on the show was genuinely still trying to find out who they were. Top star of this episode, that is. So,
great point.
Yeah. Let's go to JB's email because it's kind of related. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Do you think Cameron Grimes referencing Ted DiBiase several times since the debut of his new character will lead to some sort of storyline involving the Million Dollar Man himself, recent criminal accusations notwithstanding? Love the show and go VIP! First and foremost, didn't know there were recent criminal accusations, but also am not totally surprised to see recent criminal accusations about a former wrestler. Tom may know that. I don't pay nearly as much attention to real life wrestler stuff, so this I haven't caught. I do not think that it was intended at all for this to go. I think they referenced DiBiase because they had to. But could this grow into an appearance by him organically? Yes, I think that's almost inevitable. Tom, do you know anything about what's going on?
I'm trying to scramble to Google stuff. I was aware that there was something involving like a nonprofit that he had set up, I think even with his son. I believe Junior's involved somehow, although, again, I don't know enough about it. I shouldn't even be adding in more names. But I was aware of something. I don't know the details. But to JB's question, so, you know, those accusations notwithstanding, I do not think this is going to be a storyline. I think it's simply, you know, best case scenario for Ted Sr. here. It's just building to a cameo where it'll be a Grimes backstage segment. He'll be wandering around and ranting. And then just like a Legends appearance at WrestleMania, Ted DiBiase will just be inexplicably backstage. He'll do his laugh. Grimes will be frustrated, and that'll be the end of it.
On a takeover, I hope, you know, get a little something out of it, I suppose. Yeah, well, so it's a white-collar type of crime.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying. All right. Well, I guess that's a refreshing change of pace. Okay, so let us go to the phone lines. This is going to be the 615 area code that I go to first. You have been holding the longest, so go ahead, 615, when you're unmuted, tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Kelly and Tom, it's good to talk to you guys again. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing all right. Tom asked me, he was surprised I liked the show as much as I did. I have to say that my expectations were extremely low, partially because I had two bad personal days in a row, and the last thing I wanted was NXT when it's been a little uneven. So I have to say I'm pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I wanted to say, too, just going back, Dumb and Dumber is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. So just using any kind of Samsonite reference just brings me back to that line that Jim said. It just gets me every time. I love it. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the money line. I think of the way he delivered that all the time. It ruins Samsonite for you. You can't see the word without thinking of it. That's how indelible a mark that line has left.
Oh, man. It's funny. Tom, I hope you're doing well. I definitely thought it was a good show. I did like the show quite a bit. I'll kind of go away because I want to keep it to one question because obviously I want to get callers on. I want to kind of switch gears a little bit. I like where Kyle O'Reilly's going, but yeah, I was kind of like, I'm interested to see where they go. But I wanted to talk about the women's division, especially I wanted to know what you guys thought of Saray's NXT debut. I thought that match was really good with Zoe. I was interested to see where they went with Zoe because I feel like I'm always like, you give, you know, women some wins, and then I was like, do you want to have her lose to Saray? But I thought they did it really well. I thought Zoe got a lot of offense in, which I liked. I liked the whole segment overall. I liked Toni Storm attacking. I liked the way they did the attack. You definitely did not see that. I did not. I don't know if it was very obvious that it was coming. I didn't see it coming at all. I thought it was cool from that perspective. Getting Tony back because I was like, where's Tony? I mean, I feel like – so I wanted to ask you what you thought of the match, what you thought of Zoe losing. Did it help her in that instance? Because I feel like it did. And then what you thought of Tony and where they're going with Tony. Do you think she's still a star in the making in NXT? And, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you for all you do. Appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you very much as well. Always happy to talk NXT Women's Division. This was indeed my favorite match, I think. This went 7:09, which made it the fifth longest match out of six on the show. But all the others were like three matches in the nine range and the main event in 13.5. So not like a short match or anything. Not so surprising at this point that Zoe Stark would be in one of the best matches of the show. That's what she does. Okay. So to get the downsides out of the way. The downside would be Zoe having to lose another match and Zoe having to be painted by the announcers as the underdog when it seems like Zoe being a monster is what they're going to lean on, because she's stupid powerful. She's really, really strong. So painting her as an underdog, I feel like, is an uphill battle. The upside of this, literally everything else. This match was very good. I think Saray's music is fun. I thought her act is engaging. It seems like, based on their very brief pre-match meeting outside, that Saray probably doesn't speak a ton of English. Maybe we'll be surprised. I'm not sure of this, but I guess that could be an uphill battle as well. But as far as what she's able to do in the ring, no problems there. So very good match. Wouldn't have turned down a squash over one of the PC women or something like that, or even a Santana Garrett. But they did what they did, and I guess another upside is Zoe Stark on the show. Do I think Toni Storm is still a star in the making? I'm not sure. I feel like they have wised up to the fact that Toni's matches have a ceiling that is probably not as high as they would prefer. And I would agree if that is the way they feel. And I know Tom would as well. I think that this is a good spot for Toni. And if they use Toni as a brutal, mean, Cassius Ohno type gatekeeper heel, I actually would love that for her. Tom?
This is a good spot for Toni. I actually, when I saw the Saray Zoe announcement earlier in the day, I was specifically thinking, well, why not Toni? Like, squash matches are great, and if you did that, I would have been fully in favor of it. And I do have some favorable things to say about the Zoe match, but I was like, why not? If you want to show off what she can do in a match of decent length on her first night, then Toni's perfect, and you can just put Saray over, and you know, everything is fine. I chuckled at myself when, of course, Toni came out for the attack afterwards. At first, I thought it was Liv Morgan, because we didn't see her face, and all I saw was the hair dye. Since they did what they did with Saray and Zoe, I think the ultimate effect was, honestly, more intrigue. Like, yes, longer road squash match enhancement is probably what I would ultimately vouch for instead. But just for the one night, trying to look at the bright side, there was intrigue over, like, oh, hey, these, you know, along with Frankie Monet, these really seem like the two that they are flagging very heavily, like, watch these two. And now, presumably, Saray is going to get a win in her first match, but I'm watching a little bit more closely. Also, not being familiar with her, I wanted to see what her work was like. And that's unfortunately where, I mean, I this probably was my favorite match on the show also. I did surprisingly like LA Knight versus Dexter Lumis, although Dexter Lumis being half of that match is a major detriment to it. I think this was probably my favorite match on the show, but I also didn't really get much of an identity from Saray. And just, you know, taking that lineage of the, you know, what NXT's patterns of pulling like one major women's star from Japan over at a time. Like, first you get Asuka, and then they bring Kairi over, and then they bring Io over, and they each have like their separate run in NXT. The very first time I saw Kairi in that match against Tessa Blanchard, I don't think I had even seen a single video package on her yet, because this would have been the taping, and so I wouldn't have even seen the video packages that they would have produced on her. And just in that one match, I felt like I had become a Kairi Sane fan, and I knew what I wanted to see out of more of her matches in the future. And coming out of this, and granted, that's a high bar. He has already told us to hold her to. I don't think I got any of that out of this Saray match, and there's nothing about her look that stood out to me, and nothing about the work. I liked the one part where she whips Stark and then chased her down and drop kicked her on the other side of the ring. That was pretty cool. But good match. But for being the debut, I don't feel like I'm, you know, frothing over, oh boy, when's the next time I'm going to get to see her in a ring?
Well, that's what a 4-minute squash is for, or a 3-minute squash, is that she comes out and she does all her work uninterrupted. And that leaves a much more indelible impression, because this was a 709 match where Saray, she was in peril like 5 of those 7 minutes. We didn't really get a lot of, I guess the idea is whet the appetite, but we didn't get, I'll tell you this. The match was 2 hours ago, and I kind of don't remember what she looks like, and that's probably not a great thing. But I know that I liked what she did. So, okay, it's a start, and Zoe Stark, who knows where they're headed with her, but I think still that she's probably a future champion. Let's go to another call. This one I know. This is Darrell. Darrell, what'd you think of this week's show?
It was, I'm in between you and Tom today, so it was an okay show. It was okay. The best thing I liked about the show was the sit-down interview that they had with Io Shirai, where she was stating what she's going to be doing and stuff like that. I feel like they should have more like that. Especially if you're going to keep somebody off television and maybe have a story for them when they come back and give them a reason. I like that she said that she's been defending the title for so long that she needs to give her body a rest. And so she can recuperate from that and come back anew. So just hearing that, that was something different and something new, and I feel like they should start incorporating things like that more. How did you guys feel about that, and do you like that, or do you think it's just something to give her a reason to go up to the what people are saying to the main roster, or this is something that they're doing in the storyline and they beginning and with Monet coming out there and they teasing something with that when she come back?
Okay, thanks as always, Darrell. I think that the idea here is that Shirai will probably, I don't know if she'll get her rematch or if this will just turn into something with Frankie Monet. I think Shirai is not long for NXT, and I think that this feud is meant to give Frankie Monet a large win over somebody who can take the loss, because she's heading to a different brand where she literally won't be selling that loss at all. It won't matter. It won't be brought up. It won't matter at all. She'll go up and they'll talk about her being a 300 plus day NXT women's champion. And they will not talk about the loss to Frankie Monet, but on NXT, Frankie Monet will benefit from it. This segment was good, I thought, with her sit down with Mackenzie, I think it was. And I thought that it was, no, with Beth Phoenix. And I liked her genuine reactions to the bumps she took in some of these matches. And then the more stagey, but yes, a reaction to the agony of defeat where she lost her championship. So yes, Frankie Monet walks in on the scene, and she, on the mic, she's a work in progress. She's okay. She was a little stagey, but that's what NXT is for, kind of. And Shirai got in the funny line about, I like cats, as she's staring at the dog, like healing on a dog, which I think is hilarious. And then she walked out of the frame. I'm looking forward to this and whatever they do with Frankie Monet. And I'm looking forward to her finding her footing in this mean girl role, Tom.
Great to hear from Darrell, as always. Great to hear from Sean. I forgot to mention that, but I meant to. Just, you know, still in this now on Tuesday nights, getting more callers. It's nice. Sean always has good calls. But, yeah, I guess, okay. So EO was extremely capable here, and I think that she did a very good job with what they asked of her. But I think it's odd that they asked this of her, because so many of the questions, like Beth did most of the talking, and then EO just recited the one English language line that they had her memorize. And it's just like, you know, you want to play to people's strengths. And if this is not one of her strengths, then don't make her do it's not a long form interview, but, you know, relatively, you know, an interview segment like this, where she's being asked multiple questions, but she really only has a meaningful answer to one of them. And that was the agony of defeat one that you talked about. And yeah, I agree. I really liked her response to that, especially because she wasn't in a great deal of agony over it, which is something we often criticize. But with EO being the champion she was, I think there is a pride that her character would have in, you know, defending it as many times as she did and finally losing it to a worthy competitor that she challenged herself. I thought that was a good, you know, cherry at the on top of all of that. But it was just an odd position, I think, to put EO in. But she made chicken salad out of it. And, the Frankie Monet thing. It's just kind of funny because I said before TakeOver, like, on the by the time we got to TakeOver, I was really sold, as much of a coin flip as it seemed going in, I was really sold on the idea of Raquel going over. And I was just thinking, well, if I'm wrong there, maybe they just go ahead and go with Frankie as the next one, get Taya Valkyrie right in that top spot. And it looks like we're going to get that anyway, at least the match. So that should be good. I also last week I was saying, like, well, maybe EO will show up on SmackDown on Friday. Maybe she'll stick around in NXT to put a couple people over, because that's the precedent that has now been set by people like Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler. So it does look like that is going to continue.
Before I move to the next caller, Jack Argyle emailed us, "Hey guys, hope you are all doing great. Short email today. Where do you think Swerve's push will lead him to? Was thinking last week, would love to see him in a tag team with Cedric Alexander. Their move sets are both incredible and would mesh really well. Also can't really say I'm familiar with, I think this is Saray. Could you guys offer a bit of insight on her? Quite looking forward to seeing what she will do on the show tonight. Thanks, guys. Have a good one and stay safe. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales." I could talk about all the wheelings and dealings with international soccer with Jack A. today, because what a big day it was. But I'll just nod at you, Jack, knowing you know, and are laughing at this monstrous cluster frick. Swerve, I think there's money in him still as a single. I think that they have not used him to his fullest potential as of yet, but that is still an option, and I feel like they're finding that. I thought that Leon Ruff had a pretty decent promo on him this week. We didn't get a Swerve promo, which is a huge bummer, but, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And should they team him with Cedric Alexander? For me, that's a fallback. You can start him there and then see him grow out of that, but I would rather they try to do something bigger with Swerve and then see if he has to settle into a tag team, whether that's with Cedric or literally anyone else who's floundering in the mid-card on the WWE main roster, which is there are always going to be guys that are in that spot, Tom.
As far as Saray, I think I've said it before. All I know about her is that she has been in this for 10 years, I believe exclusively in Japan. But, you know, maybe there was some international stuff, but I'm only aware of the Japan stuff. And I know that they signed her, whether or not they were going to bring her in at that time, I don't know, but they signed her well over a year ago at this point, and she was going to report to the PC, and COVID-19 shut that down, and WWE allowed her to continue wrestling in Japan during the pandemic rather than just, you know, sitting at home. So that's all I know about that. Wish I could enlighten you more. But as for Swerve, yeah, I specifically with Cedric, I feel like their styles are too similar that you wouldn't want to tag them together because, you know, you get something like, I mean, pick your favorite tag team that has the hot tag that they build to. I think that formula is one that you kind of want to stick with, especially on main roster WWE. I don't think that they will get the most out of Swerve until they push him as a top level babyface, because I just think that's naturally, yes, I say this because that's how I saw him in multiple indies before NXT as the champion and as the babyface champion, who was overcoming obstacles and just being effortlessly cool in the process. But that was the best version of him that I have seen. That was the one that got me to pay money to see it again. So that's the one I think that they need to run with. But as far as main roster WWE, I usually shy away from being this level of pessimistic with main roster WWE. But what we've seen recently with guys like Swerve, like a Ricochet, you know, they just end up in like the 24/7 division. So in today's main roster, Swerve's ceiling is unfortunately not very high. But thankfully for Swerve, NXT is keeping people around a lot longer. The call-up is not what it used to be.
Yeah, I would not be overly stunned to see Swerve be a guy who was never called up, but had a good NXT run. Like, not advocating for or against that, but I think that his best ceiling is on NXT, which is not true of everyone. So there you go. We have a caller from Skype. So your number just looks like a lot of ones to me, but if you called from Skype and you seated a question, let me know who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, it's Hidden from London, Ontario. How's it going?
It's going all right. How are you doing tonight, and what do you think of the show?
I'm doing well. First of all, Kelly, I am excited that you're going to be on the AEW post show tomorrow, so absolutely looking forward to that.
Word travels fast. Wow. I haven't told anyone, so apparently Wade has. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what I say. Man, I hope it's a good show tomorrow. I really, really hope it's a good show. We'll see how it goes tomorrow.
I mean, yeah, last week's show was good, but we'll talk about AEW tomorrow. So today, I didn't think NXT, again, similar to last week, I don't think NXT put their best foot forward. I don't think they care about the portion of the AEW audience that's sort of going over to NXT for the first time in a year. Like, they're just not doing enough to make the show. And I know slow build, I understand the concept of all that, but when you open the show with Kyle O'Reilly, and let me just say this, I don't care what he wears. What matters to me is his disposition, right? And his disposition was very goofy, and Kenny Omega in AEW has a similar criticism, right? And it's not like they're doing this out of ignorance. Like, they're in on it. Wade Barrett actually, when he first entered, conveyed my exact thoughts right at the beginning. And then he said, and then at the end, he's like warming up to him. He's like, cool call. I can get behind that. And just like Kenny Omega's goofiness, like this presentation of Kyle O'Reilly, where he, you know, he needs to be on a serious role, is just counterproductive. And I mean, I don't care how good the match was at the end. I don't care how serious he is during the match. You can't excuse a bad build-up for a good match. That's exactly what AEW is guilty of. And they think that just because they showed a lengthy hospital angle last week that they can just, you know, now let's just, you know, be ourselves and, you know, present this goofball to start off the television show, who's supposed to be a babyface, not a heel. I don't believe it. Like, I can't believe Triple H, who really should know better, actually signed off on that. I just wanted to convey that. I know you've discussed it already. I don't think this is their best foot forward.
I'll tell you what, I thank you for bringing this up very much and for the call, because I had expanded thoughts on this that I didn't really get to because I didn't want to spend half the show on this, but I very, very much agree with what you're saying. So on paper, I think that this is exactly what the writers wanted for them to, like, their step away, where they have all these new viewers. They have these, they didn't start with a 14-minute match that had no build and was just going to be a good match. They started with a segment with a character they want people to connect to. All that, like, everything they did on paper makes so much sense. But then Kyle, for me, the gear was a problem. And it's great that it wasn't for everybody. But I thought that he did not look, I thought he looked desperate. And I'm going to make a lot of, I think I'm going to think about Cena, John Cena, a lot as it relates to this version of Kyle O'Reilly, because I thought that John Cena at times when he was supposedly cool came off as desperate. And I really also am going to make the comparison that O'Reilly's supposed to be out there selling things that happened to him, but instead he's happy-go-lucky Kyle O'Reilly, and like it seems like there's no equal and opposite reaction to his actions. He's not selling emotionally what happened to him to a level that I would expect and hope for. I understand that this version of Kyle O'Reilly wants to be himself, wants to step away from everything that is Adam Cole, but for all the good things that Cena has been, and there are a lot, he was always very, very irritating after he wouldn't sell the effects, whether they be physical or emotional, after a major, major, a personal match. That was something that always grated on me, and I really hope that that is not going to continue to be the deal with Kyle, because I freaking love Kyle. Tom, save me.
I also agree. I'm also glad this got brought up again. I think just because bringing it up again has allowed me to think more about what you said at the beginning about how this tonight's show felt a little bit more like a developmental show in a positive way, the way that we used to enjoy NXT. And as I've thought about it more, I've remembered distinct moments throughout tonight's program where I didn't bring the thought to that exact head. But I think I really am on that same path, because there were several moments throughout the show where I thought, this kind of feels like the stuff they would put on TV when they were taping it Full Sail. And it's okay to just have a match just to have a match, because the journey is already built in. The fact that it is supposed to be developmental and is to a certain extent is the journey. Just seeing where someone's at in the ring is the story in a great respect. So that did strike me a number of times. And the only pushback I have to Hattain's point is that this is what I want from NXT more, because I didn't like that they were aping AEW so much to try to appeal to the AEW audience. Like, oh, that's what you like? That's where the demo is going? Okay, well, we'll do that too. even though NXT built its name on something different. So I like that they're getting back to, well, I mean, it's still way too early to say. But, you know, on 2 weeks of evidence, it seems like they are consciously trying to get back to what made them the NXT that we fell in love with. However, they are still a two-hour show with commercial breaks and sometimes an overrun. And they are, you know, on, you know, they're not just baked into a subscription network anymore. So there are other issues there. And I do definitely agree that if they are trying to hook AEW samplers, AEW fans who are sampling the show, the hooks on tonight's show were either not good or not existent.
Okay. Well, we did have a fourth caller, but we have lost them. So, well, we have other callers, but one who was going to ask us a question. So if you get back on 810, let us know. But in the meantime, let us go to the saga of the way. So we had a match, Dexter Lumis versus LA Knight. This was the opener. I say that with air quotes because this match didn't start until 20 minutes after, because that's not the way we opened the show. LA Knight got brief mic time backstage as he's heading to the match. Brief, but full of fire. And as always, it's amazing to me that this guy is doing not that much different from what he was doing as a face in NWA, but it's 1,000 times more palatable because as a heel, it works so, so much better. And as a face, he was irritating and grating to a level that I have not seen before, or I was going to say since, but that is what we're getting with Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. But yeah, this was the opener, and I quite like this too. This was definitely one of my favorite matches of the night. And it wasn't purely work that did it, but this accomplished a lot of things. 9 minutes and 44 seconds. LA Knight goes over Dexter Lumis. Some good wrestling in this, but a lot of good character work. Knight getting the win, which I think he needs here. And was destined to get because he lost his mini feud with Bronson Reed. But Lumis gets something out of this too in the very, very strange storyline with Indy Hartwell. They almost kiss. We're almost seeing the humanity of Dexter Lumis. But the way pull Indy Hartwell away from Dexter Lumis, we did check in with Indy and the way a couple times throughout the show. We found out that we will get Bronson Reed versus Austin Theory next week, and if Reed wins, then he gets another shot at the North American Championship, and I genuinely don't know what's going to happen there, or if he wins, what'll happen in that one. So that's good. And we got another segment where Indy had gotten Candice got beat down by the tag champions, Shotzi and Ember, but Indy Hartwell during this was going to get a match with William Regal for the Women's Tag Team Championships. So yes, still very silly what's going on with the way, but we're working towards things that could be interesting. Tom?
And for all of that, threaded throughout the show across 5 or 6 segments, they still dumped the Bronson Reed could get a match for the North American title next week if he beats Austin Theory next week. They still dumped that in a graphics dump toward the end of the show. Like, oh, and here's what's coming up next week. After all that, they still couldn't, you know, tell the story. They just had to have Vic Joseph spew it at us.
Well, they did say it in the face-to-face, like it was intimated. So they didn't announce it right away, but in that scene, it was pretty clear that that's what they were doing.
Okay. Well, I will give that the benefit of the doubt then, because that was, I do actually remember that was the specific point that I looked at my phone to make the note that while last week was hit and miss, with the way humor, as it tends to be, it isn't always, sometimes it's always miss. This week was another always miss week. There were one or two things last week that I was like, okay, I kind of chuckled at that. I'll give you that one, Johnny. And this week was just grating. And the worst part of it wasn't even a member of the way. The worst part of it was the interaction, not just with not Shotzi and Ember, but Shotzi in particular, her acting. Criticized it before. Oh my God. I'm just so,
yeah.
Awful. What was the, oh, right. I want to poo poo the aspect of the LA Knight Dexter Lumis match that was like, okay, this wasn't about LA Knight at all, but this is also a dude who can take a match that's not about him at all and make it one of the more entertaining things on the show. And even if it hadn't been, I'd probably still be favorable because, as I've said before about him, his promo is so good. And he just gets that little bit right before commercial that makes me go, okay, I want to see what's coming next. He succeeds in the proverbial putting of butts in seats, in a good, every time I see the guy, I'm like, can we just scrap anything else that you had planned and make this the LA Knight show? Because he actually makes me want to watch what he's doing, no matter what it is, even if it's a freaking Dexter Lumis segment.
Yeah, I felt the same. And I also said, this is the best storyline Dexter Lumis has been in. I don't know if that should be good or damning, but I'm genuinely looking forward to his segments because I want to see how this plays out with Indy. I talked to you. I don't remember if this was on the show or not, but there was a point where the Nia Jax Enzo Amore story to me was like, I can see myself kind of watching this. And I was very embarrassed to say that, but that's how I felt. So I guess if people are stagnating, make them fall in love. There you go. Let's talk tag teams. Breezango versus Grizzled Young Veterans. This went 9 minutes exactly. I never say exactly because it sounds like I didn't really time it out, but I did. And I got 9 minutes exactly. Grizzled Young Veterans go over Breezango. The intimation is that Grizzled Young Veterans will be one of the next challengers for the tag team championships. I remain as staunchly sure as ever that GYV or Legado should have just won these championships if they wanted to try to make MSK a real babyface act, because now they're getting booed because there's too much too soon for these whiny little fans, and they needed a hero's journey in their eyes. The other tag team championship, not a championship match, tag team match, Imperium over Ever-Rise in 154. And the story here was, it was the story of a budding six-man feud with him. Tom, what the heck happened here?
Killian Dane came out.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why Drake Maverick was upset about that, but Maverick was upset about it. And then Dane was like, all right. It seemed like he and Alexander Wolfe, formerly of Sanity Together, were, I don't know, like, How would you even explain that? Like, yeah, they were aggressively. Was there even a strike exchanged? Dane ended up having to like pick up Drake Maverick like a baby, and he just sort of like respectfully held his hand out to Alexander Wolfe, like, okay, we can continue this later in a more mature fashion. And he just had to like carry Drake Maverick off.
Yeah, okay, so whatever's going on with that, I conflated the two tag team issues. This was not part of it. Breezango, they did a Royal Guard entrance. That was their thing this week. So, that's what they're bringing to the show is entrances and occasional 2-month championship reigns. Anything then on those tag team matches, Tom?
Yeah, I think the not airing Breezango's entrance did a disservice to what I think they were trying to achieve, because we came back and they were already in the ring marching back and forth. And I was thinking, is this a Prince Philip tribute? But then we see that their opponents are GYV. And I was like, oh, they're probably just trying to mock GYV or you know, razz them or something. And Wade Barrett, who he's neither heel nor face. You know, he rides the line. But on color commentary, Wade is saying how respectful and how honorable Breezango seems like they're being. And then he has to flip to being like, oh, but grizzled young veterans are so much better. And it was a weird spot that he put himself in there. But grizzled young veterans can continue their very protracted ascent. And the other one, you know, I kind of conflated it in my mind too before you moved on and mentioned it as a second match. I was like, wait, he skipped the part where Killian Dane came out. Oh, right, that wasn't this one. But I felt like this was just a quick in and out, and like no one wants to complain about Ever Rise being on TV, and that's not what I am here to do. But it really just felt like if you only had that much TV time to give this on what was already, what felt like anyway, a pretty wrestling-heavy show, this could have just been a backstage segment between Alexander Wolfe and Killian Dane with Drake Maverick coming in. And I feel like I probably would have clocked it more. I would have remembered it better when you asked me to describe what happened. So I felt like it didn't really need to be a match.
Kushida versus Oney Lorcan. That was the only other match that we have not talked about yet. That was a Cruiserweight Championship match. And my feelings are, if the Cruiserweight Championship on this show turns into a show that is always wrestled under open challenge rules for a while, that might help the division. Yes, the champ's normally going to win, but you can get some storylines out of this. And for a division that has, it's weird that this championship has had some good reigns and some good champions, but not a lot going on in the division to work toward it. I guess that an open challenge can kind of work well. So Kushida, who just won it in an open challenge last week, says that he won it this way. He wants to defend it this way, at least for now. I have no idea if we're supposed to expect this to keep happening, but Kushida defends against what turns out to be Oney Lorcan. And in 9 minutes, 22 seconds, Kushida goes over Oney, in a very technical mat-based affair. Legado del Fantasma, they distract Kushida and the cronies attack him, but MSK make the save. MSK not being in a match, probably wise this week, just because the audience has been the way they are towards them the last couple weeks. I thought maybe these guys wouldn't be on the show at all, but we set up a 6-man tag next week. So trying to babyface MSK by putting them with Kushida, who usually gets a very good reaction. But then putting him against Legato is, I guess we'll see, because those guys get cheered right now at CDC. So Kushida versus Oney Lorcan, Kushida over in 9:22, Tom.
And, of course, you're forgiven because it's all the same people from Full Sail, so it's the same mentality, you know, even magnified, because it's the ones who are hardcore enough that they're, you know, doing the invite only CDC or CDC. Yes, the CDC thing. I'm gonna stick with that. So I really liked the Steve Corino video package that they did to talk up how significant this was as a milestone in not just Kushida's NXT run, but his whole wrestling career. It really made this feel more significant. And of course, Kushida has switched back to trunks, and he's now doing. It's not the barefoot thing, but there's a word for what he was wearing, and I can't think of what it is. But again, that visual, like we're criticizing the visual character change cues that Kyle O'Reilly is giving us, and this is a good version of that. Kushida has changed his look, not significantly, but just a little bit. So when someone like Steve Corino is in a video package telling you, like, I know Kushida, and believe me, this is such a big deal for him, and then Kushida comes out looking different, it lends to the idea that this is a new era. This Kushida has reached a new chapter. This is important. And then you get Oney Lorcan in the Oney Lorcan spot. Can't complain about that. You know, nice little slap exchange. And it ultimately just feels like, you know, in the end, you're like, oh, so this is the... The cruiserweight division is the division of the six-man tag these days. And sure enough, that was one of the Vic Joseph graphic dumps at the end of the show, that is exactly what we're getting. And, you know, whatever. I think I would have rather Escobar have just moved on from the cruiserweight division entirely. But if they feel like they need to spin the wheels with him for a little bit, fine.
Yeah, and we thought that he was going to move on from that division, and I think he will, but I guess they're waiting for there to be space at the table for him elsewhere. A couple more segments on the show that we didn't talk about. Mackenzie Mitchell talks to Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. I felt that this scene probably kind of subtly got us in the direction of Dakota Kai turning on Raquel, talking about how they were the champions or they were responsible for Raquel winning the championship. True or not, this is going to be used at some point for Dakota Kai to turn heel. She is, but to heel on Raquel Gonzalez. We also got another segment involving Raquel Gonzalez, where she wasn't there, where Mercedes Martinez cut a promo on her. There's always so much going on at the top of the women's division, and it makes me very happy because there are so many women who could conceivably win this, so many realistic challengers. They've done such a good job there. Mercedes cuts a promo on Raquel and says that she'll do her a solid and take out Dakota Kai, the talker, so they can just go in there and do their business. So lots going on with Kai and Raquel, even though they're not wrestling this week, Tom.
You actually hit every point that I was thinking of. So I hope you weren't hoping to get too many more sips of your surly darkness, because that's all I got.
Surly darkness, folks. Surly darkness. It's, oh my gosh. Surly, what a wonderful brewery that is here in the Twin Cities. And darkness is a Russian Imperial Stout. And because today was a very good day for Minneapolis, I'm celebrating with a darkness. Okay, so Kevin Catani. He emailed us too. Where's my mail? I've got a lot of browsers open. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I was just listening to the Wade Keller hotline. He was discussing Shelton and Cedric being a weird choice to get fed to a returning Viking Raiders, and posited that maybe a return to NXT might be a good thing for them. That said, as we await another round of releases from the main roster, in lieu of being released, who do each of you think makes the most sense for going to NXT? Also, it's been a while, so Tom, have there been any new additions to your COVID list? Thanks as
well. Armbar.
Go VIP. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. First takeaway, I can't believe they're named the Viking Raiders. I should be over that. But I'm not. It's garbage. As for, we get asked kind of a lot who should be leaving the quote-unquote main roster and going to NXT. I feel like we land often on guys like Ricochet, who it doesn't seem like there's any idea what to do with them on a higher level. We've certainly talked about Aleister Black. Maybe there are some more interesting names to move. Maybe there are some names that they never were in NXT, at least as regulars, and maybe there's something that they and the company can gain from that. Like, I don't know, Naomi. She's not doing enough on the main roster, and she could bring a lot to NXT. I intentionally didn't think about this one a lot because I want somebody's name. I want someone to just come to the fore for me to want to see them in NXT. But I don't know who that person is right now any more than I did before. Chad Gable? I don't know. Tom?
So the COVID list, we would be here for the rest of the week. I actually, thankfully, not during any of any of my turns to speak, but Skype keeps crashing on me tonight, and I have to keep rejoining the call. Maybe it's because my COVID list is so long that my phone just can't handle so many things anymore. But yeah, I actually really did not think about this very hard either, because on the face of it, it just really feels like that same question that we've answered a number of times. And I pretty much always just say, like, Kevin Owens has a free pass. And because Aleister Black is the name that people bring up a lot, you've convinced me, okay, fine. But here's how bad Ricochet, here's how bad of a position Ricochet is in right now. The past few times we've been asked this, I didn't even think of his name because he's just not on the radar at all. And you bringing him up just really jogs my memory. Like, oh, right. Oh, yeah. One of the guys who I still say had one of the best NXT runs that anyone has had and really won me over when I was a skeptic of his, prior to his signing. That would be good to see. So I did not think about this beforehand, but as you were talking, the name just popped to mind because I think on his like random 3 a.m. Twitter rants, he's mentioned here and there that he would like to work a couple of NXT guys. I'm going to make myself your arch enemy by suggesting Randy Orton, not for a run, not for a stay, but for some appearances. Let's call them kicking the legend's tires. I don't know. It also kind of goes against what I have enjoyed about Orton in a meta sense recently, that it just seems like he and Bray Wyatt cooked up this like half a year long feud. And they were like, hey, let's take as few bumps as possible. And Randy's like, you mean I can be on TV in a top feud every single week and I don't have to work too many matches? Sign me up. Perfect. And I actually, it sounds like I'm making fun of the guy. I actually kind of respect that mentality because I appreciate a story that culminates in wrestling, not just wrestling, and a purposeful oversimplification, because I'm not trying to go off on a tangent here, but I actually respect that about Orton. However, if he does have the drive to have more than just a headlock exchange and I do not mind his headlocks are fine. But if he has the drive to have more than just a headlock exchange with someone like a Tommaso Ciampa or even someone like a Walter, let's do it. And let's have like that, I don't know if it's late career for Orton at this point, but let's just say late career, is resurgence the word, but maybe just like prove it, like the John Cena US title run, like proving his haters like, hey, you know what? He actually did get a lot from his dad. Speaking of Ted DiBiase, you got Bob Orton and Ted DiBiase as two guys that you can put on any of their matches and they're so good. So anyway.
Let me blow your mind, Tom, and say that I had thought of Orton
uh-huh.
before, who I would like to see in NXT and see what he did there. Obviously, that could go very, very wrong. But I think that that would be a very interesting thing to see a guy who is the epitome of the establishment go into NXT, which is ostensibly, not really, but ostensibly the anti-establishment, and see what happens there. I'm actually fully in favor of that and would be very interested to see what they were going to do with that. I'm not holding my breath for that to happen, but I think that it would be very interesting. And if Randy says for a while he doesn't want to jump on planes every couple of hours, maybe it'll happen. That is our show. A short one, but that'll happen when there's two of us and there's a manageable show going on. But that's what happened. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games, Tom.
I am and friends at Tom Staupe on Twitter.
When did that happen? Did I?
On Wade's hotline last day. So often when Wade is plugging our show, it's Kelly Wells and company or Kelly Wells and friends. And I'm like, man, it's been like 3.5 years, but okay. At least you're plugging us.
There's only three of us. That's like Gilligan's Island and the rest.
And
there's,
you know,
two people that are and the rest.
Last time I was trying to get Wade's attention for like a week straight and he wasn't giving it to me, he ended up dropping the Dean Ambrose interview. So, you know, he gets a pass.
All right. Well, this is Gilligan, and we will see you in 7. Cheers.